It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And joining us from Harvell & Collins, Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. What are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to continue our discussion about different types of ways to own real property. We've discussed tenants by entirety. We've discussed tenants in common. And now today it's time to discuss the infamous life estate.
Mm-hmm.
Life estates are very popular. And I'd like to spend the time this morning on the program talking about the life estate. And the first cousin, of course, to the life estate is the remainderman.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the advantages, disadvantages, if you will, of a life estate.
Okay. A simple definition probably would help to start.
A life estate is a bifurcation of the ownership of real property. Then basically someone either through a will or through a deed, says that I hereby grant a life estate to this particular person, or I might add persons.
Mm-hmm.
There can be more than one life tenant. There can be successive life tenants. I give a life estate to Mary, and the life estate is to continue for the life of her children.
Mm-hmm.
And then upon the death of her final child, the property vests in the remainderman. So
okay,
there's the bifurcation between the life tenant and then who ultimately is going to own the property, which is known as the remainder interest or the remainderman. Now there are rights and obligations that then arise as a result of this ownership in land, just like there were, as
mm-hmm.
we discussed, with tenants by entirety or folks who own land, tenants in common. And I think what is most important about the life estate is kind of interesting to say it that way, is what we don't know.
Right.
You know, at our office, Wes, myself, Andrew Foster, Russell Alexander, we're constantly having to, and very important, you know, giving important that we give thorough explanations of the life estate.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think folks do not particularly appreciate all of the ramifications of someone owning a life estate. Now, some of those are the life tenant has the responsibility to continue to pay the taxes. The
okay.
life tenant has the responsibility to pay the insurance, Ben, on the property.
Mm-hmm.
The ordinary maintenance cost related to the property. They also are eligible to all the rents and income that is derived from the property.
Mm-hmm.
They, by the way, don't have to live at the property.
They can rent it.
They can rent the property. They have the right to utilize all of the benefits of that property. And there's no requirement that they live on
mm-hmm.
the property or
mm-hmm.
or be domiciled on the property. They have the rights to any kind tax abatement, or if there were a condemnation proceeding, any kind of revenue
mm-hmm.
that would be that could be generated as a result of real property ownership is now the property of the life tenant.
Do they have rights to make improvements to the property?
Yes, they can make improvements to the property.
Mm-hmm.
What they cannot do is to allow the property to go into what the law refers to as an area of waste.
Mm-hmm.
That's the legal
word. They can't
word.
Abandon it and just
let and
it
allow
deteriorate.
It to become deteriorated to the point that the law would consider it to be that the life tenant is creating a waste to
mm-hmm.
the property.
Mm-hmm.
Under those circumstances, the remainderman has some cause of action to, again, require that the life tenant keep the property in a circumstance where it would not be considered wasteful. Now, this does not mean that the remainderman's able to come in and say, well, you're not mowing your grass enough.
Right.
You know, you're not keeping the property as pristine as my mom used to,
mm-hmm.
things of that nature. Ordinary wear and tear is certainly acceptable, and waste is an extreme Mm-hmm. Would be the case law would define it as somewhat of an extreme, as you mentioned, complete and total abandonment,
yeah.
And there being real problems with the property to the point that it almost might be a public nuisance. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about a couple of scenarios where this comes up. What is one of the ways that this mm-hmm. happens? I would imagine maybe a long-term live-in caregiver might be given a life estate or.
Yes, absolutely. Or in, as we have discussed so many times on the program now, Ben, and we're seeing so much more of this factual scenario in our office, you know, our elder lovebirds,
mm-hmm.
you know, our folks who
right.
are in a relationship in their elder years in their life and just simply do not want all of the obligations and rights of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
We have files where people will not get married because they'll lose the pension. They'll lose the insurance benefits of their military husband. All sorts of many reasons why people are electing not to necessarily get married for the second or third time in their later years in life.
Okay. We have a caller standing sure. by. Let's see if Joe can add to our conversation here. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a quick question for you, and I'll get off the phone and let you answer it. It has to do with estates. My parents died, and there were three of us, three children, three siblings, that were all named as the administrators on the estates.
Mm-hmm.
And the smartest one, they gave the checkbook to, and we all agreed that she was to take care of the estate. Since then, I found there's been a check account found with a substantial amount of money in it that she's been writing checks to herself in. Now, my question is, what are our remedies as far as that's concerned? And I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Joe.
Well, there's no question but that is a breach of fiduciary duty and self-dealing, self-interest, and you would have to petition the clerk of court, if the estate is still open, to have this person removed and to have their authority revoked as executor under the will.
Wouldn't you first just simply ask for an accounting? I mean,
well, yes, you're right, Ben. You would try to, of course, work it out and to
mm-hmm.
to see if there is a way to cease this kind of action and if there's a way to make restitution and to reestablish the account and then, of course, move on. But if you can't do that, then the legal remedy, of course, is going to be for her letters of executorship to be revoked.
You mentioned if the estate is still open, then they are also obligated to make an accounting to the clerk annually, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Uh-huh. But, yes, they are.
So there should be, again, and that would be cause for removal if they're not doing that.
That would be, if they're not filing those accountings properly. The twist in the question a bit is that he's mentioning that Joe is saying that he and his other sibling, as well as this sibling that
right.
is acting inappropriately, are all executors of the estate. And of course, that does kind of put a little bit of a different twist on this, but it still doesn't allow the one child that through agreement between the executors has taken over the checkbook to make checks, you know, in a self-dealing or self-serving way.
Right.
So that is certainly something that's a very material breach of fiduciary duty, and it needs to be corrected immediately because the other fiduciaries here, Bob and his other sibling, you know, are also responsible for the appropriate and proper administration of this estate.
Exactly. Now the executor can be reimbursed or even paid, right? But who is to determine how much that is?
Well, the executor is entitled to an executor's commission, and that's fixed by law and also approved by the clerk of court. And then there would be there are appropriate reimbursements for such things as you know, out of pocket expenses and things of that nature. But reimbursing oneself is very, very for a legitimate expense is very different than what I'm
right.
kind of hearing
exactly.
here happening.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the issue of life estate, Ben. I think that another thing that many of our listeners do not know about the life estate is that it has considerable value.
Mm-hmm.
This is a shock to most clients that the life tenant has a very valuable interest in the property.
Mm-hmm.
And that interest is, and where this comes up is that the remaindermen say, well, we're just going to sell the property. And the life tenant even agrees that, well, I never really wanted to live there.
Right.
I don't want the upkeep of that property. Mm-hmm. I appreciate, you know, your father thinking of me like that, but I have my own house, or I'm going to go move in with my children mm-hmm. in a different state. Well, you know, the value of the life estate became real on the date of death of the grantor of the life estate.
Mm-hmm.
And now this person is seized with a life estate. And, of course, again, the value of that interest in real property can be quite significant. And the way that it is calculated is that we look at the life expectancy mm-hmm. of the life tenant and convert that age, if you will, based on a table, to a percentage.
Huh.
And then a percentage of the sales price is allocated then to the life tenant. And in my experience of doing these files for some time, I find that clients are really shocked
mm-hmm.
at the significance of that value.
All right. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a moment. If you have a question like Joe did, you can give us a call, and Mandy's standing by to take it.
Call me at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 and 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, online at harvellandcollins.com. And Cecil Harvell with us. We've been talking about life estates.
Well, Ben, we are. And it's very complicated and mm-hmm. complex, the issue of a life estate. It should not be something that our clients go into casually. You know, again, I think we have to understand that a life estate interest is an interest in real property. So if you're granted a life estate, either through the will or through a deed, then, you know, how do you get rid of it?
Right.
Even if you elect to get rid of it, the transfer of the life estate can be a gift.
Mm-hmm.
The transfer of the life estate can disqualify you for Medicaid benefits if it's within the 5-year look-back period, if mm-hmm. it's not done properly. Again, we have to think of a life estate just like we think about, well, what if we inherit a home? What if we own 50% of a tenant's in common interest? It is a life estate. It is an interest in real property. It has value. There are consequences if we transfer it. There are gift tax consequences. There are consequences in terms of if we sell the property.
Right, right.
Okay? And so all of these things need to be completely understood by the client. And then if the client then understands this, and if the remainder interest,
mm-hmm.
the remaindermen understand these rights and obligations, then at that point, you know, we have a green light
mm-hmm.
and we're fine. But the facts really do need to fit the concepts.
I'm going to imagine a scenario. Again, let's take your scenario of the elderly lovebirds. And they're
uh-huh.
not married, but they're living together. And one says to the other, you know, if I go, I want you to live here.
Right.
I want you to have this
exactly.
place. But he doesn't give it to her.
Doesn't realize that that means that she has that responsibility.
Right.
Taxes,
mm-hmm.
insurance,
mm-hmm.
upkeep. Ordinary repairs.
Right, right.
He, of course, is thinking, bless his heart and his good mind and good soul, that he just wants her to have a place to live.
Right.
But he is also giving her all of the obligations of property ownership.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they, as we know, are significant. That just needs to be understood.
Right. So that's discussed ahead of time, not just between the two of you, but within
right.
your estate plan or your attorney.
It would be typical of the older lady, if you will, or older gentleman to say, well, but I don't really own this property. Your children eventually are going to get this property. So I think they should paint the house. I think they should pay the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should maintain the property, Mr. Harvell. After all, it's not my property.
I'm not going to gain anything.
I'm not going to gain anything by this. I think that they are the ones who are ultimately going to own the property. I may only be living another 10 or 15 years, Mr. Harvell, and so I think they should take care of the property. Well, that again, the facts need to fit the law,
mm-hmm.
and the law is that you, as the life tenant, are responsible for all of the ordinary upkeep of the property, taxes, insurance, maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Now, can within mm-hmm. that, can you create a separate? Well, how do you handle that so that person might not have everything taken if they get sick too? If they have to go in, qualify for Medicaid.
Well, this is an interest in real property, just like any other interest in real property.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have to adjust the file and work on the file, just like we would with any interest in real property, so as to help to qualify this person for Medicaid
mm-hmm.
if they go into a nursing facility. But it can't just be ignored.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be, well, I don't really own the property because I just have a life estate.
All right. Again, uh-huh. if you're considering that, you want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins and get the right advice at the right time. And you can call them at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. And we'll have more with Cecil Harvell in just a moment. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And Cecil Harvell with us this morning. We're talking about life estates and other subjects, too. And we have another Joe calling us from Bridgeton this time. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
Question for Mr. Harvell. I deeded some property to a couple of my children in Pamlico County.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hunting land, or it was land.
Right.
And, of course, I still get the tax thing, it's got a LE on it and all like that. How about hunting on private land now? Do I have to have a writ permission from them to hunt on it, or?
You have deeded it over?
Yes, sir.
Well, these folks are your family members, though, correct?
Yes, sir, yes, son.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that they, I mean, the answer is yes. I mean, if you are on any property other than property that you own, you need permission to be there.
Right.
Now, if you had deeded this to and had sold it, this hunting land, farmland, I mean, not farmland, but timber and hunting land, as you say, to a stranger for value, then you would, of course, certainly made an agreement with them to say, well, I want to continue to hunt there during the rest of my life. Do you have a problem with that? And that would have been discussed and maybe even reduced to writing so that you would have permission to enter on someone else's land. With it
right.
being your children's land, I would assume that permission is somewhat implied, just because of the fact that, after all, you gave this property to your children, and therefore, you it's implied that you, though, however, as dad, want to continue to hunt there. But the legal answer to your question is that if we're on someone else's land, my friend Bob, then we're going to have their permission to be there.
Right.
Well, even after the fact, you may
right.
now may mm-hmm. have to go ahead and get some verbal or written permission.
Right. Well, I understand it, I mean, it's no problem about it. Of course, I'm not a real big hunter anyway, but I do go down there with them, to bow the lines and the alleys
right.
and all, whatever you call it. But,
their verbal permission is enough, right?
Well, I think under legally, no.
No.
But under these circumstances, with it being a father and a child, probably a verbal understanding is we'll maybe pass on that for now. Mm-hmm. But agreements concerning real property have to be in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I understand. If you got, if you own land and it's painted purple, the boundary line, you do have to have a written permission on your persons, you know, to
be there.
Hunt on the land.
Yeah. There you
and,
go.
Of course, I like that. There's no problem and all like that. You know, he did have a problem about, you know, the tax papers coming to me, you know. And I
well, the tax papers, if you transferred the land by deed, Bob, eventually the tax office should catch up. It might take a year or so, depending on the time of the year of the transfer, but the tax bill should not still be coming to you. If you, in fact, did a deed over to your children, you might want to check on that.
Well, I've seen the deed where, you know, that I deeded it to him. And like I say, he's got the deed, but the last 2 years, you know, the tax has come to me.
Yeah. In your name or just at your address?
Just at my address.
But with your child's name.
Right.
Yeah, well that's a common scenario. They changed the name, but they had your address on file. So that would
right.
be a matter of you going to the tax office and saying, this tax bill needs a different address. This is being sent to me, but under my child's name, here's my child's address.
Right.
Okay, yeah, you just need to change that address on that.
Okay, okay.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Y'all have a blessed day. Then.
You too.
Thanks.
All right. Again, these are questions that come up with property.
Lots of real
property questions all the time.
There are lots of real property questions. Ben, we have to remember that real property is probably the most valuable asset in any client's estate. All of us value greatly our home or our farm, or whatever real property we happen to own. Absolutely.
All right, give Harbell and Collins a call with your questions at 726-9050. That's 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.